Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance. The CFO role is changing rapidly, moving from cost controller to strategic visionary. And with every change comes opportunity. We are here to help you take advantage of this transition, to win at work, drive your career forwards, and lead with confidence. Join Hannah Munro, Managing Director of ITAS, a financial transformation consultancy, as she interviews key experts to give you real-world advice and guidance on how to transform your processes, people, and data. Welcome to CFO 4.0, the future of finance.
So hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of CFO 4.0. Also with me today is Cecile Parker. Now, Cecile is the Group CFO of Vital Energy, and we're going to talk a little bit about her journey to CFO. We're going to talk about a wide range of topics, everything from carbon footprint through to integrating finance into the wider business. So an exciting series of topics. So welcome, Cecile. Fabulous to have you on the show.
Thank you very much, Hannah. Thank you.
So tell us a little bit about yourself, Cecile. That name sounds very French. So tell us about where you're from and your journey.
I was born in France 45 years ago. To be fair, growing up, I wasn't too sure what I wanted to do until I fell in love with horses and decided to look at various jobs around horses. So I tried many sports and gave up after a few weeks. But I was still mesmerized with horses and still am today. So equine vet or maybe also going into the army as a mounted horse guard. I know it's very different from accountant. Life would be so different today. So I kind of knew that both options required very good grades and degrees. And I was always a total geek when I grew up. Always worked really hard at school to the point that, for example, when I was horse riding, I still had my revision cards and studied while I was on a horse. So that's how geeky I was. My mum also reminded me last week that when came 1st of July, actually, which is when the school holiday starts in France, I was straight to the supermarket buying holiday revision books for the following year just to get ahead, basically. That's the geek.
Hey, I remember my dad buying me maths books for train journeys because that was my idea of fun, right? You're in good company, exactly. Right? We're all geeks here.
It's a real disease, exactly, being a nerd, you know. And I keep telling that to my son, actually, that even though I was a nerd back then, I'm kind of cool now. I haven't turned out too bad.
So, I think my parents always like to think they're cool, always agree. Right?
Yeah. So anyway, came the equivalent of A level, because obviously we don't have that in France. And whilst I got the grade I needed, I'd also realised two things during that time. So I had issues with authority. Difficult childhood with divorced parents and aggressive father, I would say. So the army was looking less appealing. And vet, well, I'm actually quite a bit squeamish, so the option was also slowly disappearing, to be honest. So I did more soul searching and thought a business degree actually could be right up my street, kind of more general. And I did have various business acumen. So I thought, that could start with that and then maybe specialize in one area. So in France, you have to do 2 years at prep school before you can get into the business school. So because of my nerdiness, I managed to do that in 1 year and get fast-tracked to business school. So off I went. I ended up in Compiègne, which is an hour from Paris. And I did my first 2 years of business study there and really, really enjoyed it. And for the third year, I had the opportunity to basically go abroad and to do a double business degree in another language. And at the time, there were a different option, but actually the best one for me was to go to Holland. Now, I'm not going to lie to you. Most people went to Holland not for study. They went there for the alcohol and for the drugs. It'll be no surprise to you, however, that being a geek, I actually studied to the disappointment of most of my classmates, and my roommates as well. So they were all becoming expert in some kind of chemistry whilst I was actually doing the curriculum with a select few others. I was not the only one, but there was definitely a reduced population. Yeah. And so whilst at business school, we had to do a placement at the end of every year. And which I think is really good, by the way, to have people coming in, you know, through their youth actually, or younger years to try and get an experience at work rather than just, you know, the studies trying to apply what they do. So I was lucky enough to have a placement at, Coca-Cola in south of France in one of their manufacturing plant. And with the secret recipe and all that. And I had the best time there. I really enjoy working in finance. And I think that's when I found my niche, basically. I met some really good people that kind of taught me to really like numbers, spreadsheets, and, you know, and be even more geeky. So that was a defining moment for me. And they offered me a job whilst I was there, actually, but at very entry level. And I thought, I want to finish my degree. So obviously I kept in touch, but carried on with my degree. So at the end of the double degree, after that year in Holland, I also had to do a longer placement. So this time it was a year. And to validate that I could speak English, which at the time I couldn't, the placement had to be in an English-speaking country. So I got in touch with Coca-Cola again, because I thought there might be an opportunity to go some glamorous places like their headquarters in Atlanta, for example. But I was sent to Ireland. So in Drogheda. 45 minutes north of Dublin. And at this stage, genuinely, my English was just not good at all. I was able to read and write, but I couldn't have that kind of conversation. But off I went to Ireland. And again, you know, I just put myself into it, basically. And I had no choice but to speak English because nobody spoke French there, as you can imagine. So it was a bit of broken English initially with a very, very strong accent, but yeah, I got there in the end. And the Irish are super inclusive. Like, I really enjoyed my time at Coca-Cola there. And still have loads of friends there. And on a day to day, they really engage me. I must have been excruciating for them. I think because when they were asking me a question, I had to kind of put sentences together, and by the time I'd actually string a sentence together, they'd moved on subjects, really. So it just clicked, and I got on with it and learned. I probably learned to swear a lot as well because they're Irish, right? So Coca-Cola Ireland was the really start of my career, I would say. So I got a job in accounts payable, and I had the ingredient suppliers from A to F. And I just felt so important there at the time. I knew I wanted to progress within finance, basically, and within the organization. And whilst I was there as well, I met one of my best mates, Imelda, twice my bridesmaid. She has made me swear that if I get married again, she will be my chief bridesmaid third time round. And she was also in accounts payable. And like me, she was very ambitious, and we had chats on what we wanted to do, and we thought, you know what, we will do our exams. And at the time, Coca-Cola was sponsoring the ACCA, so off we went and started on the journey. And it is a journey, especially when you're working, you know, hands off to anybody, or hats off to anybody who does it whilst working and with a family. Because it was really, really hard. But for me, I hadn't studied for a few months, so I had withdrawal syndrome. So I had to get back onto it, to be honest. So that was really, really good. And whilst I was doing that, I was also rolling SAP as a system. And that gave me really good experience in terms of rolling out ERP. And after that, basically, they rung me back in south of France and said, would I come over, basically, to roll out a new ERP? And they wanted somebody who spoke both English and French. And at the time, I was much better. So not many candidates available for that. Just moi, basically. So off I went to south of France, and I took the role of financial controller. And that's been a theme, I guess, throughout my career, is just to put your hands up for various projects outside of your normal day-to-day. You know, working accounts payable, it wasn't a straight path to doing ERP implementation, being involved in that. But actually, at some point, somebody had said to myself and Amanda, do you guys want to be involved? And we went, yeah, you know, we'll learn tons doing that. So go for it. So I went back to South of France. I still studied for my ACCA because it takes a few years, doesn't it? So I was studying at home, ordered the books and went to various places to see the exams. That worked really, really well. But at the time, my first husband was, came back with me to South of France. But he couldn't find the job in South of France. So he was in Lyon, which is about 3 hours. So we were commuting. And that only worked for a number of months, basically. And we thought, no, we just need to move to a place where we can both get a job. So I moved to Paris, and I moved to Alstom, Ariba, the sexy world of transformation and distribution of power. So again, you know, from you go from Coca-Cola to this, but it's our skills are very adaptable, I think it served me well to kind of move on to a different industry again. I think that's one area where we'll touch on this in a bit, but. The imposter syndrome, I think, has been throughout my career something that I've really fought against. But to progress, you just have to get through it, basically. And, you know, where you've got that feeling of self-doubt and sort of personal incompetence that persists despite your education, experience and accomplishments, you just have to fight through it and go for it. So working harder and holding yourself even higher in terms of expectation. That's what I've been doing basically, and every time kind of going for a new job and something more challenging, stretching myself basically. So that's the time that I spent in Alstom, did various kind of jobs and progress internally, work on the sale of the of that division. Which again was something new. And when I'd done that, didn't really want to go back to kind of the old job. So I was able to go abroad, and I came back to, or I went to the UK rather than come back. I went to the UK, and that's 18 years ago now. And hopefully by now I am actually fluent in English. It's still, you know, work in progress. Some of the words sometimes escape me. When I moved to the UK, again, I was acting FD, but I still had the title of financial controller. And what I wanted was to really get to the next step in terms of, getting an FD role. So again, I carried on trying to get, you know, bigger and bigger role. I was headhunted to work for Caldwell, John Caldwell, Caldwell Communication. And that was a fabulous experience. Many people have said to me, oh, you know, that must have been really tough. And it was tough because there was no, we didn't carry any passenger, basically. You either worked really hard or you were kind of moving on. but really enjoyed that experience. Again, learned absolutely loads. I'm working alongside very strong people. And I think that's, again, that's a theme to work with people who really want to do better for themselves, but also do better for others. And that's what I want with my own team, really. So a huge amount of work, a few good mentors, along the way, and believe in yourself and, you know, you kind of get there. What else? So then I had my son, Matthew. And so I went on maternity leave. When I was on maternity leave, actually, I was bored. So I thought I'll do another finance degree whilst I was on that leave. And people often look at me as though I was crazy at that point. But in my defense, Matthew was sleeping a lot. So I just needed, you know, something to get me going. So learning, I just think, is the greatest wealth that you can have. And nobody can ever take that away from you. So, again, my advice to anyone is if you want to progress, just keep going and put your hands up for any project and learn. So I did that. And I did the International Financial Reporting degree. Now it sounds really dry, and it actually is very dry. There's no other way about it. But again, it just gave me another tool in my toolbox in terms of things that I can apply at work and greater experience to grow basically within their professional life. So. After that, I had my first finance director role, and it was hard. It is a shock when you are signing up the numbers and you are finally kind of the first one in line in terms of finance. But really embraced it, and I went from strength to strength basically in those roles, and again in various industry, and finally in private equity, and that's where I've definitely found. My specialism. I just love to come into a business, help it grow, and go through private equity cycle basically, and see, how we can make the business more attractive and sell it on, which is what I'm doing today. So that's my career.
That's a lot of career, and I've got a list of questions as you're going through. I was like, oh, that's interesting. We need to get that. So I'm going to start. I'm going to work my way backwards. So you said that obviously you found your niche as a CFO in private equity. So tell me a little bit about what it is that is different about private equity for you, and what's so exciting and gets you interested in it.
So usually in private equity, what I've found, what I've been exposed to, is businesses that will want to be sold at a later stage. And so the business needs to grow. Sometime like Vital, for example, it's a family business that has got so much potential. And the attraction really is to have something that you take from 200 million to 500, 600 million, and in terms of value, really help create a much more significant value of the business, the enterprise value. And that comes with implementing a lot of changes and working in better ways and being more efficient. And that's really what drives me. I know I couldn't work in a business that is just the same month after month, year after year, and just, a bit of growth there and a bit of growth there. I really want to be in businesses that are undergoing some kind of significant transformation, because I know I can really add value there. That's what kind of makes me get up in the morning thinking, yeah, I can really add value rather than just produce numbers every month. That's just not funny.
No, absolutely. I can't imagine you staying still long enough to just produce every month. And we talked a little bit about confidence and, that whole concept of imposter syndrome. And actually, when I listen to the history, you've really sort of stuck your hand up all the way through. It's kind of been a few big leaps and big jumps into different roles and different responsibilities. Absolutely. So how do you balance out when you look back in those days, that feeling of not being good enough, but also somehow finding the courage to step up and ask and take up those opportunities?
So I think I must like scary stuff, basically. Often I have said, I'll do this, not necessarily knowing how to do it. But I guess it gives you a bit of your confidence grows and grows over the years, knowing that you've not let anybody down. And you just have to go for it and push yourself, really. And I think that's where I try and supplement that with all the learning that I'm doing on the side. I'm constantly trying to, learn new things. And also, you're only as good as your team. I know it's a cliche, but it genuinely is true. and that's the team that you've built underneath you, but also the team, around you, and your broader life team, I would say, husbands and wives, and not that I've got one of those, but and children, and everybody around you, your friends, etc. So I think it is pushing yourself, supplementing with learning, and constantly going for it.
Absolutely. And I have to say, you know, listening to a lot of the people that are successful, they always have that mindset of, I need to learn more, I need to know more. So,
yeah.
And I guess as you've got...
And fail fast as well. Sometimes, you know, sometimes you will not get where you need to be, but you just have to recognize, yeah, that didn't work. Try something else. And react quickly, basically.
Yeah. Not fearing failure.
No.
And as you've gone through, we've talked a lot, obviously you've talked a lot about sort of obviously the more formal qualifications, the degrees and the ACCA, but I kind of get the feeling there's a lot more learning that goes on in your, has gone on in your journey than those more formal qualifications. So what else do you think has really set you up for success on your journey?
So I've been in various organization, I've been on technical training as well. So engineer training, health and safety training. I think every business that you're in, you need to embrace what the business is doing. There's no way you can understand numbers, explain numbers, set strategy, or, you know, help set the strategy without understanding what the business does or what people in the business do. So yeah, I've done various other courses in and around that. Also the more HR management type courses and, you know, communication. And I've just got a real thirst to learn. It helps with my confidence, basically. The more thing I know, the better, I feel. The worst nightmare for me is going into a meeting completely unprepared, for example. That's just, you know, it doesn't happen. or when it does, it's really by accident. And I just have to know what I'm talking about. Otherwise, yeah, it's more difficult. So the knowledge and, you know, supplementing that with various courses has just been, yeah, throughout my life. I still study now. There you go.
Hey, I'm on the same piece. I've never, you know, I wish I had more time to spend learning. That's my piece, is that I sneak it in on all sorts of things, but I completely agree.
Yeah.
There's something incredible about learning so much, and I'm in a really lucky position. I get to learn every project that I work on, every customer I work with, I learn something. I'll either learn about a business, a type of business, a type of process. And for me, that's incredibly exciting. So, and I guess it's the same for you, because you talked a lot about sort of as you go into a business, you want to kind of understand the nuts and the bolts and really get integrated into the organization. So tell me a little bit about how you approach that.
So, for example, at Vital, I have joined only recently. So it's 9 months, although I think people think I've been here for quite some time, given the number of changes that we've gone through. But I think whilst we are accountants and, you know, we know numbers, like I said, you can't really help the business if you don't understand the business. So having this real partnership and going far beyond your accounting remit is really key. You just cannot add value without knowing that, basically. And there's a few things that we need to be able to do to achieve that. So first of all is being visible in the business. And I like my people to, as in people in my team, to go around the various teams and work cross-functionally, because I think that's really important. And I try and push that even beyond just working. I think creating that collaborative approach and friendship as well in the business is really important. And very recently, as in this week, we've revamped our office for the last 4 weeks, and we've moved into the same premises, but just different layout, different desks, etc. And we've opened up a bit of a kitchen area, a breakout area. And I'm encouraging people to kind of move away from the desk at lunchtime and, you know, go and chat, and with other teams as well. So we're sat next to HR, for example, and we've got executive assistants as well that are coming with us, and IT. And I think, you know, creating that bond then helps you. Then having conversation together in various team meetings where you kind of approach a problem which is cross-function. Many problems are cross-function, right? main issue that we try and resolve, you need help from other functions. And if you create that kind of bond and that partnership, then you're more likely to actually resolve this a lot more effectively and efficiently. So that is one aspect. And the other aspect, of course, to enable that is to have a lot more automation. So again, looking at something cross-function, something that we're trying to do at the moment is automate more of the purchase to pay process, because again, I just don't want to have people doing transaction non-value added activity where, you know, at the moment they do a lot of that. But if I free up their time, suddenly they can do a lot more analysis and look at, again, rather than looking in the rear mirror, looking forward and going, right, you know, if we did this and this and this, this will help the business grow, or this will improve margin, or, you know, this will improve cash. And you can only do that if you can get your head out of numbers and spreadsheet and copy and paste and, you know, doing the same thing 20 times over and over, and actually create the time to have the headspace to do those analyses and, you know, really help the business in terms of decision making and growth and, yeah, margin improvement and all of that, basically.
I always find it's really amazing that people underestimate, they'd look at automation projects a lot of the time in terms of the hours saved versus the value added. And for me, that's the big shift that we need to make. Absolutely. In finance.
Yeah. And that is my one thing, basically, you know, just try and automate. And we have automated already. You know, the team has really changed over the last 9 months. And I think sometimes they just say to me, slow down.
We just need to breathe. Give me 1 week.
But the more we do these things, the more, you know, we become efficient at what we do and less repeat, like this non-value adding stuff is really my bugbear. And just spend more time, you know, across multiple teams, just working together and make things more efficient. And then suddenly you've got the time to kind of go, right, this is how we're going to do, you know, this piece of business, and it's going to make more sense. Or we make more money, or as I said, we get more cash or quicker, or, you know, all of that is just, you can only do that if you automate and if you work with the business as well. So business partnering and, yeah, finance integration is really, really important to me.
And have you hit the snowball effect? So I talk about this a lot, is that there's a point at automation where you start to roll downhill. You feel like you're shoving uphill for like the first little bit, and then all of a sudden you go, oh, and you start to get more and more. And then you start looking at other places to automate as well.
Yeah, absolutely. So not in this business, because I've only been here 9 months, and it needs a lot of, you know, we've got lots of room for improvement, which is fabulous. You know, one of the reasons why I joined. But I have had that in other businesses, and yeah, it's just fantastic. And when you can prove that concept as well, suddenly you get more people coming to see you from other teams going, I've seen what you've done here, you know, can you do the same with us, you know? And so yeah, absolutely.
And how have your team, because obviously it sounds like you've gone through a massive piece of change in that 9 months in a very short space of time. How are your team managing that change and coping with that piece? You know, were there any, you know, areas where you're like, you made a conscious effort to help them on the journey? How did you approach?
Yeah, so I am checking very often with them, because I am conscious that I am 100 miles an hour, go, let's do this, and, you know, and I will work every hour of the day, I could say. And, you know, I can't expect that from everybody, and I shouldn't expect that from everybody. I need to check myself. So I do tell people, you know, please tell me if we're going too fast. Also, you know, tell me if you need more training on this or more training on that, and really try and work more, yeah, collectively and collaboratively, basically. And be open and honest. I think it's really important, and show people that, I'm not Wonder Woman either. I am vulnerable and I do need help. So I reach out, you know, I can't do it on my own. They can't either. So we need to work together and deliver that together. But they have seen, I really feel that they have seen the changes. I do feel that I have their full support, and we're working well together. And it is a change because we are, my predecessor was very, very different. He was very good as well, but we just very different people. So there's a lot more changes now. it's been a shock for them, for my team, but also for the team, you know, on the board, basically. They have seen, you know, something different, and I have to check myself and kind of go, sometime I need to be more patient. Not everything for tomorrow. But yeah.
No, I 100% can agree with that. So I'm always looking to drive that forward. So I feel your pain, but it's an exciting journey to be on, isn't it? And when you've got an amazing team, it's just so much more fun.
When you see the smile on their face when, you know, when you say to them, look, you no longer have to do this thing every day. The one thing that at the moment I'm trying to eradicate is the stamped on invoices. I think when some of my team listen to this podcast, they will laugh because the first few weeks that I started, I was sat in the office and suddenly I heard this noise and I thought, I recognize that noise from about 20 years ago when I was at Coca-Cola doing it myself, you know. But we're in 2022. We shouldn't be stamping invoices to say received on that day, you know, that kind of stuff. And there is lots to do. But when you see people kind of going, yes, you know, we no longer will be doing this, and that means we can do this, this, and this because we've got so much more time now. And it's going to be amazing.
And in terms of how your team think about, you know, we talked about the concept of integrating finance, that whole business partnering piece. How are your team feeling about that shift? And is there any support that you've put in place to, obviously from an automation perspective, you need to free up the time, but what about developing the skills for your team? Have you brought people in? Have you developed the existing team?
Yeah.
What's your approach?
So I think it's been a bit of a shock for some people when I've said, can you go and speak to somebody? And they initially reverted back to sending an email. And I explained that is not what I mean by can you go and speak to this person. I mean, actually going up to speak to the person or ring them on video and have that interaction. And it is mentoring. You have to help people coming out of their comfort zone. You know, same for me. Networking and things like that is not necessarily my forte, but I push myself doing it. And so I recognize that in myself. And I think most people are like that, actually quite shy. I'm not necessarily wanting the attraction. I think COVID doesn't help either. So I do a lot on that to bring people. So we'll have lots of meetings or just quick huddles, and as in huddles, not cuddle, huddles. And you know, bring
that's
people
a different
together.
HR problem. Yeah. There,
and again, in this new office that we've got, we've now got like a high table with stools and stuff, and we can just, you know, quickly get people around it and go, right, get on the screen or on the board and discuss something and bring people from other teams. And the more and more we do that, I think the more people go, actually, that's much quicker than sending an email. And I do realize you can't necessarily get everybody around the table, but, you know, we've got lots of tech now that you can actually just call somebody and have a few people on video and, you know, encourage that interaction, basically, really, really key. And then the other thing that I do, which I started many years ago, actually, whilst I was at GLA, is this concept of quarterly finance meeting. And everywhere I've been where I've launched that, initially, people are just like really scared, because the idea is on a quarterly basis, the whole of the finance team meets. And I've had bigger team and smaller teams. So here I've got about 20 odd people. So the 20 people meet for about 2-3 hours, and we go through different subjects. And I'm not doing the talking, even not at the first one. I'm doing a bit of an intro, but then everybody in the team will take it in turn to present something. And they'll present something that they're working on, and it really helps people in many different ways. So, for example, for the more junior people who've never done presentation, that, you know, that's a big leap. And I know, like me, speaking in public, you know, will scare some people. So I think the best environment to do it in is in front of your team, right? Because it's people you know and you're working with. So it's a lot easier. So they do that. It also helps with the rest of the team understanding what other team members are doing, and you know, sub teams, because credit control doesn't necessarily know what the accounts payable team is facing in terms of challenge, or you know, the financial controller. Or we also use that forum to kind of bring updates and new training, new tax rule, new you know accounting rules. And then I also invite what I call VIP every quarter. So people from other functions to again tell us about something that we can learn from. So we've had our head of IT that's told us about cybersecurity and you know anything to do with that. We've had our head of marketing telling us about what they were doing in the marketing function, and more specifically about climate education, which is a big thing for us at Vital. So bringing people on board. I've also had the CEO, Ian Whitelock, coming in at the very first one to inaugurate it and telling us about what the business is going to do going forward, and you know what's the future of the business, how we're going to grow, and all of that. My guys would not have been kind of exposed to any of that. And I just think it's really good. It really works. That's why I keep doing it in every business. And I'm hoping, you know, when others move on, probably they take the idea with them. But I think that's a really important thing. It gives people that opportunity to learn how to do PowerPoint, because I do ask them to do a few slides, not death by PowerPoint, but a few slides, which again, I think is a really critical skill actually in finance, because you can't just deal with Excel spreadsheets. You have to be able to, you know, provide information in a way that people can understand it, and, you know, visually and all that. So I coach people on that, and I review. I obviously don't lead them to their own device, you know, especially if they've never done it. So we sit together and you know, they do drafts, and then it's an iterative process. But at the end, you know, it really creates that bond as well in the team. And usually we have a bit of pizza, or like the next one is on the 15th of December. So obviously it'll be Christmas, and we're doing food from around the world. I've ended up with Oceania food. I don't know how, because I actually don't have French. But anyway, it was a draw apparently. We try and have that team bonding as well as learning and making it fun. I'm really keen to have fun at work. I spend a lot of hours working, and you don't need to be sad to kind of work, right? So I try and make it as enjoyable as possible while still working really hard. That is definitely what they would tell you if you meet them.
Absolutely. No, and I think sometimes you can underestimate the power of fun and humor in delivering productivity. Life is just so much better when you're enjoying it.
Yeah.
So I would be very remiss if I didn't use this as an opportunity, certainly at the end of this podcast, to talk about what you guys do as an organization. So in terms of the climate conversation. Right. So I think one of the things, whilst I mentioned the name Vital Energy, we haven't actually explained to people what Vital Energy does. So tell us a little bit about your organization and what you do.
Okay. So, well, everyone is talking about net zero at the moment and about reducing carbon footprint. And it is the raison d'etre of Vital, which is French. So we provide basically sustainable energy generation, distribution, and consumption management solution through our expertise basically in design, in building and operation of district heating system and energy centers. So we basically help many organizations, many businesses around the UK, to start with, to reduce their carbon footprint and make savings and be more sustainable, which is really important nowadays, isn't it? Because even in terms of investment, everything is around ESG, and when you look at private equity, so many more private equity now are making investments that are all around ESG and carbon footprint, and people that are running businesses that are more and more sustainable, which we can help with both in terms of finance and monitoring, measuring, and understanding what each business is doing. Basically, I think as a CFO, you really need to do that. And then as Vital, basically, that is all about the business in terms of sustainable energy generation. So it's a fantastic business to be in, and that was a really big attraction for me when I was approached for this job. I thought, I want to be, my next job, I would really like it to be in a business that is better for the environment, better for future generation. And so I was absolutely sold on Vital from day one.
And how does Vital, obviously leading the way in terms of driving down carbon footprint, but how does Vital tie together finance and, the ESG piece? How do you guys work internally as an organization to support?
Well, that's something that we are working more and more on, actually, because we're very good at helping. That's just like everybody.
Builders of the houses. I don't know if you have that phrase in France, right?
Yeah, it's so true. Slightly different, but yeah, that's exactly that. So we're doing tons, actually, internally in terms of reducing our own carbon footprint and by everything else that we're doing for other businesses as well. We just need to be better at kind of putting it out there. And I'm meeting quite a lot of businesses at the moment, actually, through various tender process for cost reduction, cost efficiency, margin improvement, etc. And everybody's coming at me with, this is how great we are at ESG. So you can tell that it's at the forefront of everyone. So we are doing loads in terms of, electric vehicle, making sure that we've got solar panel, all of that for us, for our own carbon emission and reducing travel. We do the carbon offset as well. We're planting trees, all of that we do. But we're just not so good yet at portraying that. But, there's always room for improvement.
Absolutely. And if you're ever going to be in a place to learn about how to do it and how to do it well.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I've recently done a sustainability certificate actually with ACCA, which I found dead interesting because it wasn't just pure accounting numbers. It's definitely something that is going to be more and more needed for us as finance. We are going to have to do a lot more and bring more visibility to ESG, and we discuss it at the board anyway. It is one of our topic every month, but. Every organization and every CFO, FD out there will have to do more towards ESG and how we measure it. And then there's going to be more accounting rules around it anyway.
So I'm very aware that we're running out of time. And I predicted, I did promise, guys, at the beginning of this podcast, I was going to cover a lot of topics, right, in this time. And I said to Cecile, it's just going to disappear, right? You're going to have to come back on at some point just to finish off the topics. But if we take a step back and we go, one of the things that you keep telling me and you've told me throughout this podcast is all about how passionate you are about integrating finance with the business and making finance a part of the business. So for those of the CFOs that are going, I agree, and that's where I want my team to be and I want to be there, what top tips can you give them for making that leap and for supporting their team from driving that change?
So I would say literally encourage or force your people to go out into
carrot and stick.
Yes, exactly. Bring them along with you and go into the stock room, go into other departments, go and see sites, go and see, I've been, if people are seeing me on LinkedIn, I've been to various sites throughout my career, not just this one. Talk to other people, because as accountant, we don't have the best, we're seen as nerdy. We're also seen as the police that implement lots of rules. Most of them we haven't made, by the way. we just have to make sure that they're applied. We don't have the best publicity in the business. And I think, going out there and actually creating those relationships or forging those bonds by whichever way it is, that's really, really important. And that would be my number one tip, basically, just to get people cross-function working together encourage your people internally to talk to others and not just in send an email, go and meet people, meet the business, understand what we do, learn about what it is we do, from engineers to, you know, marketing to whatever it is in the business, and yeah, get out there.
There is so much value in that, the cross-training capability, yeah. The understanding of the business and how the rest of, you know, the organization functions is so important.
Yeah, I don't think you can add value if you don't do that, basically.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those that are listening, and obviously we've talked a lot about integrated finance, we've touched on the concept of carbon footprint and driving that down, which we all know is something we need to do. If people want to learn more about what Vital Energy do and how to get involved and how to look at that, where can they find you guys? Where's the best place to go?
So our website is really good, vitalenergy.co.uk. Sounds like a salesman there.
I will put the link in. Don't worry.
We're also very present on LinkedIn, actually. We post various videos, and our customers will refer to us as well, with all the projects that we've done, and all the carbon emission and cost reduction. So LinkedIn and the website is probably the best. And then in various cities, you know, so I'm near Manchester. In various cities, we've got various projects. So we've got the Tower of Light in Manchester that every time I go in Manchester and I see it, I'm really, really proud of it. So things like that, where you can find us. And
fabulous. Well, next time, we're literally just, you know, down the road near Chester. So next time we pop into Manchester, I will definitely pop down and have a look. Exciting times. Well, thank you so much, Cecile, for taking the time to talk to, you know, and to talk so passionately about not only obviously the concept of climate change and, you know, reducing carbon footprint, but also the power of automation and transforming finance. So it's been a wonderful to have you on the show. I really, really do appreciate you coming on.
Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Now, for the £1 million question. What is the best finance software for your business? Is it A, Sage 50? Is it B, Sage 200 Standard? C, Sage 200 Professional? Or D, Sage Intacct? An impossible question to answer without a lifeline. But we have the perfect lifeline for you. Our free quiz, Which Sage Product is Right for You?, will tell you which product is the best fit for your business in just 5 minutes. All you need to do is head to www.itassolutions.co.uk and answer a few simple questions.